The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. This program will take you behind the scenes and deepen your understanding about the patterns and perspectives of leadership today. Now, here's your host, John Schmidt.
Well, hello. Welcome again to this week's edition of Zoomed Leadership. It's a pleasure to be back. I am your host, John Schmidt. And again today, as I love to do most weeks of the year, I'll be taking you out to the big picture, into the up close and personal, and toward a world of desirable futures, those that I always like to say are rich with the essence of constant renewal. Well, it's great to be back. We have been off for a couple of weeks here. We will be live this week and next into the Thanksgiving holiday period here in the States. But I must say, as we begin, it is simply gorgeous here. And last week I was in the Berkshires, which is in Massachusetts, Lenox, Mass, here in the States. I was there for a board meeting of the Cosmos Journal. But the leaves were bright. They were predominantly yellow, and they were aglow on the trees here in the fall. The weather was warm, and the focus of our meeting, amidst other things, included a rich and illuminated conversation on the financial and monetary system we are living and living through. And as you know, for several weeks, we have been talking about that, the backdrop of the world's financial realities, the context that that links into in terms of the era of extraordinary change that we are living and is coming our way even more fully. And we have been talking about the fourth turning, the evolution of society, which is then in many ways a dramatic upshift of our world going forward. We've been doing all of this. We've been exploring the challenges coming and the new unfolding possibilities. All of that has been combined, as we've been talked about, to the pain and some particular pain, probably of the financial world, to be expected. And today, I'd like to continue our focus on the possibilities and on the potential, potentially the good news, perhaps even looking at the glass half full as a backdrop to our evolving story and discussion here in Zoomed. And to do that, my guest today, with focus on sustainability and sustainable futures, is David Johnston, founder and president of What's Working, Inc., and what I would say is one of the true pioneers of the sustainability movement here in the United States, and even more broadly than that. David has been involved and essential, and I think a real critical underpinning to building sustainable communities more broadly around the world. Not long ago, just by way of introduction, David received the SAM Sustainability Pioneer Award, which is considered, as you may not know, but it is the Nobel Prize in the sustainability world, and it does acknowledge the personal excellence in implementing principles of sustainability that we talk about here on Zoomed and doing so in this award in the corporate sector. David's got a rich background. He's an author. One of his books, Green from the Ground Up, I point you to it, recommend it. It has been a bestseller on Amazon. It has also been a Nautilus Book Award Silver winner in 2009. But most importantly, as I introduce David to joining us today and for next week, David is really, I think, a perfect fit for Zoomed. He is a big picture thinker. And most importantly, he's grounded in the on-field realities. He's actually been doing the rich work. He has been integral in my estimation to the conversation that we've been having on Zoomed about integral sustainability, where he has not only been pointing and painting to the world and how to achieve sustainability in it, but he has been engaged in market and systems transformation, the underpinning of what we talk about on Zoomed, about ideas into reality. He's done that in California. He's done that in other efforts nationwide here in the U.S., and I suspect since the last time I spent much significant and dedicated periods of time with David, he's doing even more broadly worldwide. But on top of all of it and all the credentials, we're pleased to have David on. He's a good man. David, great to have you with us today.
I'm humbled by your introduction. Thank you so much.
Well, I earned more than I can imagine, David. I have to tell you, it's been a pleasure over the years getting to know you and our first encounters at Integral and what we were doing there and what you were bring to life. And I think I really applaud that, because in this world of sustainability, it is that beyond the theory, it is on the ground reality, and you've done it so well. But let me ask you, David, as we get started here, because I think this conversation can be so rich, and there's so many elements to talk about in terms of so many domains and dimensions, but you get a sense of what I've been pointing to on Zoom. But I'm curious about kind of the take and your take on the world, on where we are, and perhaps even our show title today, From Here to Sustainability. How might you lead us into kind of a context and a perspective for our conversation?
Well, I think it's all about perspective at this point in time. We are at the most critical of junctures, perhaps, that this planet has ever faced, but certainly this country. And we're making decisions rapidly on the Republican side as to who's going to run against the president. But more critically, I think we're really making decisions about how we're going to vote with our pocketbooks. And if we vote out of fear, we'll probably get what we vote for, and that's more fear. If we vote out of optimism and intention, we can create the future with intention. And that's what I spend my time doing, is helping people create their personal and community futures with clear 2020 vision of where they want to go.
Well, David, I think that's a really rich frame for us, because I think we've brought in the notion of fear and the backdrop of it and how easy it's to go there. Maybe you can say it a little bit more, because, I mean, it feels at the same time like we are in a conundrum, and it's easy to get in that space of fear. And as we've been building up this perspective about the big debt problem and the debt situation and the challenges coming, I mean, it's pretty easy to go there. How do you actually invite people in this discussion to go beyond that?
Well, I think we need a critical truth-telling moment just to deal with the conundrum as you talk about. Actually, it's a series of conundra, from climate change to peak oil. When you add oil and water issues, what you get is food, and so we have food just exploding in price all over the world. Wheat has doubled, corn has doubled. That has led to tortilla riots in Central and South America. Species and biodiversity and the extinction of critical species that we don't even know their role in the macro ecosystem, much less who they were. Climate change is leading to natural disasters and extreme weather events. And climate change is too big for any of us to grasp. But weird weather, everywhere I speak in the world, people talk about the weird weather that they're experiencing. Both.
Yeah, I was just laughing because it was weird weather. I mean, leaves still on the trees in the Northeast last week after a huge winter storm the week before. I mean, it was a surprise. I mean, it's kind of like that all over the place.
It is. And we can't change the climate, but we certainly can prepare ourselves for the changes that we are in. It used to be, I've been doing this for 35 years, and we used to talk about future generations and the legacy that we are leaving for our kids and their kids. And in fact, it's accelerated to such an extraordinary extent that we're the generation that's starting to experience these massive changes planet-wide.
So then we have all of this, I mean, the conundra, as you're talking about. We've got a lot of things coming together here. And I guess then, David, what do you suggest in the way that we might look at this? Because if it's all coming together like that, in one hand we can say, holy shit, we're really up the creek.
We are. And that's where I say the extreme truth-telling is so critical, because only with that impetus can we start to pull together the vast resources that are emerging that fill the cup half full of technology, of solutions, of primarily consciousness about how do we address the future. And I say that because sustainability now is an inside-out process. From our personal mindset or worldview, we can start to apply technology in a wiser fashion. We can start to incorporate social policy, whether it be on a community scale, state scale, national scale, that lead us towards a more sustainable future, a healthier, more dynamic, more evolutionary future. But we have to have that internal work to drive this kind of change that we're talking about. And so all of my conversations about sustainability start with how do we shift our mindset in such a way that we're able to fully engage in the positive visions of the future and not react to what we fear the most, which is social and economic collapse.
And David, though, at the same time, you've used an interesting word when we just talked briefly before the show about this, that at this time, it's not only this conundrum of the problem and the fear, but you really described that perhaps we're really at a new renaissance of sorts. And maybe you can describe what you mean by that. I mean, it's easy for us to sort of paint a picture and kind of throw the word around loosely. But in your mind, what is that really suggesting? Because that has some fabric and mirror to what we've been talking about on the fourth turning as well.
Great. Well, it certainly does. And the renaissance, and I'll use green building as an analogy, and I'll use several analogies to help grasp this more fully over our conversation. But in green building in 1990, it was an unheard-of concept. It was beyond America, happening in other parts of the world, but didn't have a name. And in 1992, the U.S., the only U.S. award from the Earth Summit in Rio was to the Texas, Austin, Texas Green Builder Program. And since that time, over 15 years or so, many of us jumped on this bandwagon and created a parallel industry to the conventional home building industry, such that by 2005, 6, 7, we had tipped the entire national home building industry to the point where the Industry Trade Association, the National Association of Home Builders, president said, if you're not building green by the end of this recession, you probably won't be in this industry anymore. And so that's what we're talking about, taking conventional market forces and transmuting those into a market which demands a higher consciousness solution, which green building is relative to conventional built-to-code housing.
So, David, let me just pick up on that. I hear the music in our ears, and before we get in, and I don't want to break into more a further underpinning to this, but I'd like to explore more about the Renaissance, what that means, and about the different elements of major systems, as you were describing, energy, food, water, all kinds of things that underpin it and get that more clear. But hear the music in our ears here. Let's take a short break, folks. It's our opening segment here on Zoomed. Our focus today, from here to sustainability, our guest, David Johnson. David Johnson, take a short break. Come back in just a moment. Thanks.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. The Zoomed Leadership Conversation today, as well as shows both past and upcoming, are intended to illuminate perspectives on the great transition in motion, the extraordinary era of change that is affecting all of our personal lives, our organizations, our communities, and our governing institutions. Big shifts are happening, and more are coming. Some can be foreseen, but many are outside current paradigms of thought. All, however, ultimately will be shaped by new and expanding forms of leadership, capable of holding the widest possible views and the deepest forms of interconnection. Join Zoomed host John Schmidt weekly as he rides the rising wave of intelligence, moving us all toward a world of immense potential, dynamism, and economic, social, and environmental renewal. Zoomed is sponsored in part by Avastone Consulting, a source point for development of leadership and organizational resilience and sustainability for the last 25 years. Find John and his colleagues at Avastone via avastoneconsulting.com.
It's all Arizona, all over the world. If you're a local Arizona high school sports fan, or if you're a transplanted fan somewhere else in the world, have we got a show for you. The first internet sports radio talk show focusing solely on high school sports is The Coach's Corner with Scott Lovely. Tune in to talk about your favorite teams, players, or coaches. It's 100% Arizona high school sports coverage and a little bit more. Tune in Mondays at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern, to the Voice America Sports Channel.
There's a course offered on Seventh Wave Network that you never saw offered in college. One that provides information on how to transform ancient wisdom teachings into everyday life. You'll learn how to create from your spirit and explore the world with all of your senses. Participation is encouraged. Enroll in Spirituality 101, the course you can't afford to miss, with your host, Reverend Norma. Classes in session every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time, in your favorite classroom, Seventh Wave Network.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, back on Zoom today. I think we are really from here to sustainability, and it is a more positive. I think it is not only a more hopeful, I think it is a more positive underpinning and probability that we can really consider sort of the nature of the fourth turning we've been focusing on here. David Johnston is with us as our guest, whatsworking.com, his, as you will find, his website to be able to get to him even more clearly and fully. But David, we started talking about the Renaissance at play, and maybe you can say some more about that because you've introduced more of the idea of the interiority, the inside out, of sustainability, but the Renaissance, are you meaning that in a social context as well as a tangible form, or say more about it?
Well, it's a both and. Sustainability is only one of the legs of the tripods that I see that are necessary for our next steps into this coming decade. Resilience is a word that comes up often. We talk about personal resilience. How well do we adapt to change? Some people are very fixated on their own construct of the universe, and that's melting away. I mean, we've seen many financial masters of the universe now reduced to strictly their BMW, looking for a job. And so our ability to be flexible and look at alternatives, look at options of different ways that we can connect with our neighbors, create more resilient neighborhoods that are flexible as things change, energy prices go up, water becomes an issue, certainly here in the West. Resilience is a key concept, and again, that's an interior-out kind of concept. The second or third leg of the tripod is vitality. We're trying to create generative well-being. It's not just how do we survive. Sustainability has this essence of survivability, and I hate that. What we really want is thrivability. We want the ability to be well, create well-being in our local community, and I keep coming back to local because that's where the genesis of all of this is going to spring from. It's not going to come from Washington. Washington's bankrupt morally, mentally, emotionally. And I go back to the warning that came as far back as 1992 from the Union of Concerned Scientists that a great change in the stewardship of our earth and life on it is required if vast human misery is to be avoided and our global home on this planet is not to be irretrievably mutilated. That was 1992 when 1,680 senior scientists brought this to the attention of the world, and we've ignored it all of these years, almost two decades worth. So piece by piece, what the universe has started to unfold is alternatives to all of the fundamentals that create a healthy and a sustainable, resilient, vital community. And I call it the 10 systems, and that includes urban design. How do we live together in a dense urban environment? I was just in Washington, D.C. this last week, and the density is just exponentially higher than when I left in the early 90s. That brings up whole different issues. Building design. What I've spent most of my time is working on home. If we can make changes at home, then it's much easier to make changes in neighborhood, in community, in city, in state, and so forth. And so, as I mentioned, green building has become the way we build in America. And if we can continue that momentum in some of these other arenas, such as energy, food, water, transportation, communication, health, and so forth, we can start to aggregate solutions as opposed to the fragmentation that's current right now, everyone in their own silo. And as we build into the future, this sense of emergence starts to happen. And we're seeing emergence characterized by the Occupy movement. Whether you believe that it's the right way to approach it or not, it was an emergent concept that was unpredictable, a black swan event in the current vernacular. In other words, an unpredictable event that has a major potential for dramatic change. And that's what I'm seeing as the bright light, is this potential of emergence in each of those silos, and we have solutions in hand that are either current or on the way to the market as we speak, that as we start to pull together these emerging systems, we can connect globally with others, and we've done that with the green building world. It's literally a global phenomenon. My latest book is on zero energy homes, and it's just a concept that's ricocheting around the world. China, India, Australia, Europe, even Central and South America are starting to grasp this concept of how do we live free from the grid. We can stay connected to it, but minimally from the standpoint of dollars and cents every month, and prepare ourselves for the extreme weather events that will continue to grow in intensity, frequency, and duration. So with this increased complexity, we're also dropping out an increased simplicity of how do we as individuals and communities have a more direct relationship with each other. So the simplicity brings us back to localization. And I think localization is the key where we can really have an impact on all of these issues. And we can make it global, but it has to start at home, and it has to start where we live.
Well, David, I like it, and so our listeners won't lose it. I really love what you've done in this sustainability, almost as this three-legged stool, where there is sustainability and the multifaceted, holistic nature of the 10 systems and what's going on, but actually considering that in relation to resilience, as you're describing, about how we're preparing and adapting and being able to flourish through what's actually happening in terms of some of the change coming our way and perhaps some of the pain with it, but the vitality and the orientation that you're describing about thriving, not just surviving, and the way that actually shifts it. But I love what you've done and described this about the nature of the emergence, the simplicity of that, and how that simplicity comes through the intersection of our communities at the local level. And that feels like a very energetic, life-giving, life-supporting, and not sort of this battery running down on the world. That feels like, David, where we started about the positive and the optimism of the world.
Exactly. And let me give you a very specific example of that. I live in Boulder, Colorado, which is a very visionary community. Some people call it the People's Republic because we're so off the wall on occasion, out of the box, certainly most of the time. And what we just recently did in this last election is we seceded from our local utility. And it's a very interesting concept because municipal utilities around the country have been the most supportive of individual self-reliance, supporting solar on rooftops, supporting local wind farms, and creating a more rapid transition into a renewable energy future, which I think is the cornerstone of all of our conversations. If we don't have control over our power locally and we're at the effect of some big multinational company like our local utility, then we don't have any power ourselves, literally and symbolically, to make these changes. And so our local utility just invested $1 billion in a brand new coal-fired power plant, and Boulder said, no, that's not the direction we want our future to go. And we're now, by virtue of a vote of the public, moving in the direction of owning our own local utility. Hmm. Not a new concept. It's been around for 100 years. But it's rare that a community has seceded from a big investor-owned utility.
Interesting, David. And that was by an actual vote of the community as opposed to the county commissioners by themselves making that decision?
It was a vote, and it's the city of Boulder, not the county, yet. But what it's done is it's started conversations now all up and down the Front Range, including Denver and Fort Collins and Boulder County and others. But it's a symbolic and necessary physical step in a very tangible way in having power over our own future, and that's what we're after.
And that's an interesting contrast. We're talking today. I'm in my our small studio here on the bay in Sarasota, Florida, but we voted the other way. It didn't have a vote in our community, but at a county level, we actually committed to a long-term agreement with Florida Power here. So it's an interesting contrast. Maybe you can say a little bit, and because this sounds like, David, this is a core system we're talking about here, what is the importance that you're really describing around having that control of it?
Well, the way I look into the future, I see it as a series of discontinuities, and it's a big word, but it gets the point across really well. How many of your listeners have had the experience of flicking a light switch and nothing happens? So, for example, after a hurricane in your part of the world, probably tens of thousands of people have had that experience.
Mm-hmm.
It gets more rare when you turn on a water faucet and nothing comes out. Both are examples of discontinuities. You go to a grocery store and you want fresh fish, and there are no more fresh fish in the freezer cabinet. And so as things get more complex and challenging, we're going to be experiencing more frequently these types of discontinuities. And so what we've determined as a community is that we want to be in control over, we have windstorms, freezing rain, blizzards. We want to be more in control over how we respond to those climate situations and what we can do about it together.
Great, David. I hear that, and I want to pick up on this some more and explore a little bit more of energy at the backdrop, but I hear the music in our ears here signifying a break. We're about halfway through here, but let's just take a quick turn, folks. Take a short break. Got a couple of messages coming, and we'll be back with David Johnston in just a moment. Let's continue this. Let's consider the larger interconnection that David's describing, the systems underpinning it. Let's come back to energy in a moment. Take a short break. Come right back.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Zoomed Leadership is sponsored in part by Cosmos Journal, the journal for world citizens creating the new civilization. More than just a publication, Cosmos is committed to informing, inspiring, and engaging the world in the transition to an emerging, sustainable, just, and compassionate global culture and civilization that works for all. For over 10 years, Cosmos has been a leading voice that tracks the deep systemic transformations already occurring at the margins of society as our institutions prove unable to serve the needs of the times. Published twice a year in print and digital, Cosmos includes leading-edge articles from social change leaders on the global commons, people power, global governance, new economics, collective intelligence, and cultivating the self. The impact of these paradigm-changing ideas is enhanced through stunning visuals and photographic stories that motivate to action. Start exploring Cosmos Journal and continue opening your perspectives about leadership and the emerging great transition at cosmosjournal.org. Join the Cosmos Leaders of Change and make a difference today. These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Zoom Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's avastoneconsulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, back on Zoom, third segment, From Here to Sustainability. Where are we now? What are the possibilities? David Johnston, our guest today, really explore this. And David, we were just talking more about energy and about Boulder and about the empowered nature of the community, really bringing energy more localized in a sense. Say a little bit more about this, because you're bringing this conversation, as you introduced, more to the importance of the local scene, but describe that a little bit about that and the importance as you're seeing it there and the way that it rolls out and extrapolates to others.
There's a very simple point of departure in this thought process, and that is distributed versus centralized. So in the energy world, we call it distributed generation, which means simply having your own energy, having solar on your own roof, having your own wind machine in those places where that's possible. But decentralized energy allows you a greater degree of control. I live in the mountains of Colorado, and often our power goes out because we're at the end of the power line. I have a battery backup solar system. And so I can go for 3 days without the utility. And that 3 days is cloudy, snowy, blizzardy weather. As soon as the sun comes back out, I'm self-reliant again. My system that I put in 12 years ago has paid for itself over and over and over again because I've been able to work. I work out of my house when the power is down and the rest of my neighbors are dark. So that's a metaphor of what we're trying to get to. Electric vehicles and plug-in hybrids give us another degree of distributed storage where we can use our car literally to store excess energy. We plug it in at night and we plug our car in during the day. When the power goes, and the power is cheap at night, we can charge the batteries. If the power goes out during the day, we can use our car to power critical systems in our houses, as well as the electricity to get us back and forth if we go through another OPEC kind of nightmare of politics of influencing the availability of oil in our world. So piece by piece, we start to look at what are the resources that we have locally. And humankind has always lived locally until roughly World War II, when we started to globalize our industries. The military-industrial complex was the first to globalize, but now, of course, you talk about Florida Power and Light. Well, they've got utilities all over the world themselves. And they've got solar installations all over the world that they've invested in. And so this globalization and monopolization of one industry over another, we see buyouts of one chain into another, so that we have, for example, 11 banks left, except for small local banks or credit unions. And so the movement from centralized, and let's stay on the banks for a moment, of power in New York, to localize the power of a credit union that loans locally, that makes car loans locally, that makes mortgages locally, that supports small business locally. If we can literally shift our consciousness to support those local businesses and keep our dollars in our community, then there's more economic muscle to work with, to go around. And this whole movement of localization starts with an inventory of what do we do best, wherever we are. Here in Iowa, you can grow a lot of corn. I'm not sure you can survive on corn, but you can grow anything in your backyard garden. Colorado, we don't have that luxury. So we're creating a whole greenhouse truck farm industry here in the Front Range of Colorado so that we do have tomatoes in winter or vegetables in winter. It's very much the case with our homes. If we look at our home and what our utility bill is and how much energy we're using, how much water we're using, how much we import into our home to support our comfort and our livelihood, and start to piece by piece pick off those things that we can have control over, i.e. energy in particular, we start to be empowered. And the sense of empowerment, both personally and locally, is profound. It's just extraordinary. I'm on a hillside, and I'm out looking out amongst my neighbors, and I can probably count a dozen houses from here sitting at my desk that have solar on their roofs and are much more self-contained than the folks that don't. And this is where locally we can band together. Again, I'll use my neighborhood as an example. We're in a private water district, 450 homes up in the mountains, and we had a 500-year drought in 2002, which meant that our surface water disappeared, our well ran dry, and 450 homes had no water for over 2 months. That's the discontinuity of turning on the faucet. And so we got together at our community association and decided we would build a dam on community-owned property. And now we have 2 years' worth of water stored so that we will never run out of water again. We're the only community that I know of, especially in the West, that has taken it upon themselves to create their own water insurance policy. So whatever we have or don't have becomes that inventory that we start to address sooner than later, hopefully, and we see community movements all over the country starting to make these inventories. It's called the transition movement of what do we do best, what do we have surplus of, what do we need that we don't produce locally, and start to fill in those gaps.
And David, this feels very important to get at the outset of the two shows we're talking about, that there you use the term the consciousness, the mindset, but you're really suggesting that there's a fundamental characteristic of this renaissance, which is moving away from these large, centralized, almost systems of totality, kind of the way the market state, as we've talked about on Zoomed and we'll talk about some more, could move even further to a world globally managed financial system that doesn't have much control locally. You're really suggesting here that this renaissance is bringing this much more closely, not without sacrificing anything, but by bringing something more closely to our own control and connection with each other. And it seems to me that's an important recognition that I wanted to put an exclamation mark on, that this movement toward more localization is an essential piece to understand and to begin to be aware of.
Well, exactly. And we're seeing what happens when we have an interconnected global financial network. We are at the effect of traders in New York and Dubai and London and Paris that we're doing stupid, crazy things with our money. I mean, just, I know the guy that invented the derivative. He lives here in Boulder. And he just shakes his head with such disgust in how they exploited something that was a potential, powerful market instrument, and exploited it in such a way that it got leveraged thousands of times over and turned into the global recession. What we want to do if we move back into a more local economy and we support our local businesses and we support each other, and that can even include bartering, supporting each other with our respective individual skills, and then beginning to create local currencies. There's a guy named Bernard Lyotard, who's a Belgian, that was one of the original architects of the euro, who says actually the euro has gone in errant directions from the original architecture of the currency, who has helped create hundreds of local complementary currency systems, Ithaca, New York being sort of the paradigm of what that might look like. And local currency, complementary currencies, are ways in which we can keep dollars local. We export dollars only to buy those things that aren't made locally. For example, who makes safety pins anymore? They all come from China. And so we aren't going to have a local smelter and steelworks that makes safety pins. And we all need them at some point or another. So discerning what's local that we can support, discerning what we need to import, and defining that boundary, whether it be a city or a county boundary, in such a way that we create an intentional, what I call a parallel economic ecosystem, whereby we support each other, we support the local technologies, we support the local solar installers, we even now manufacture solar here in Colorado, and so how can we use more Colorado solar panels rather than Chinese solar panels, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, in such a way that we became much more stable, much more resilient through the economic impacts of the last 4 years. Boulder really suffered very little. Our home prices stayed fairly constant. Our homes are much more energy efficient. A new home in Boulder requires 50% as much energy as a conventional home by national code, and that's the Boulder city code. And so we've done this as a community in multiple ways and multiple dimensions, again, looking at these fundamental systems of building, water, transportation, waste, health, food, finance, energy, communication, and our respect for the local environment and our interdependency with the local environment, so that now we're becoming step by step an example of what's possible. There's another area in the Seattle region called Whidbey Island, and Whidbey is a ferry ride away from Seattle, but as half of the island, the south half of the island, becoming increasingly self-reliant in all of these different subsets or silos of what community self-reliance requires. And it's been a fascinating process to be a part of and to witness, because they're probably going to be the first kind of off-grid community that's living in comfort and living in a thriving context.
And David, we've only got about another minute or so here in this segment, but I'm wondering, as we close on this, it seems as if what you're describing, this centralization versus decentralization, sounds like the centralization has a sense of the discontinuities, and that's where the shocks will likely be centered out of the financial crisis and more. And it seems to me it's a natural point for us actually to begin to have this awareness. And before I actually ask you to respond to that, I hear the music in our ears, and let's take a break, because I want to give you the full time we can in the last segment to build this perspective from this show and into the next show. Take a short break, folks. Come back, David Johnston, to wrap up in just a moment.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. The experts are here. Voice America Business Network.
Tune in every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. On the show, Aldana and some of today's top business professionals will discuss some of today's most pressing business issues that hold you, the business owner, back. Aldana will also give you 21 ways to grow with her list of growth strategies. Grow smart, grow profit, and grow your business with Aldana Ambler and The Growth Strategist every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on The Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Think of the world 50 years ago. Now think of this same world and how it'll be 50 years from now. Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America.
How can we Americans realize our dreams to earn a living? How can you pursue your dream and make money as an owner or an employee? Learn how at The American Business Person, the online weekly radio talk show hosted by Rich Killian. Today's business leaders share how to succeed and what fails. If you own a new or established business or ever hope to, you must tune in. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Central, and noon Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. Or listen on demand to our archived shows.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Zoom Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, wrap-up segment today. We're looking at sustainability, a broad view of it. David Johnston is with us to do that. What'sworking.com is his web address, one way to get a hold of him. I encourage that. I encourage you really to peruse David's books as well and come back next week. We'll continue this conversation even more explicit ways with some of the more details of the systems. But, David, let's end this show today. I was started to paint the picture about the shocks. We've been talking about the shocks here on Zoom, the different multiple aspects of what those might be, but the large centralized system and the impact on us. Maybe you can point to us in the last couple of minutes here about what do people do, those that are maybe experienced in this conversation and those that are almost new to this conversation on a more localized level.
Well, I like to use an analogy, and that's I live in the Denver area, and there are a lot of folks that go to, say, San Francisco for vacation to appreciate the Bay Area. And so there are two couples making the drive from Denver to San Francisco. One couple goes from Hilton to Hilton, and they drive their expensive SUV from place to place, and both decide for a scenic route to drive down the loneliest highway in America, Route 50, that goes through Nevada, and it is absolutely empty. And I've driven that highway, and it can be hours, in some cases days, before you see another car. The other couple is in a Volkswagen camper van, and they're going camping in California, and they've got tents and sleeping bags and got some water and containers in the back and some instant food. Both cars break down in the middle of Nevada, and I've also had this experience personally. And it's hours before you see another human. And in this case, the folks in the camper van say, well, looks like we've got our first night camping. They pull out their tent, their sleeping bags, they build a little fire, have some coffee, and make their own dinner. The other couple is totally terrified and horrified that there they are in this predicament with no resources to work with. And the question is, which car would you rather be in? And so thinking through, because you have such a diverse audience, John, whether you're in Stockholm or whether you're in Miami or Lincoln, Nebraska, there are various ways that we can start to insulate ourselves from those shocks. And I always start with home because that's where we spend the vast majority of our time. And I think that energy is what makes the biggest impact in our lives. If we don't have light at night, the world is a very different place. We can, first couple nights, chuckle over how easy it is just to go to sleep with the sun and get up the next morning. Well, it gets dark now at 5:30, and that's a long night. So at a minimum, candles. At a maximum, start to look at a solar alternative for yourself. What I've just spent the summer doing on my own house is wrapping the exterior of my 1972 vintage home in the mountains with outsolation. So it's 2 inches of rigid exterior foam that seals the house up tight, that adds, in my case, almost two times more insulation than I started with. And so even when it's down in the 30s at night, the house loses maybe 4 degrees. So by morning, it's 65, 64 degrees with no external or with no internal heat source. It's a super insulated house, and again, I write on zero energy homes, so I'm practicing what I write about. Looking at FEMA standards, and they say, well, have at least 3 days worth of food and water in your house. I think that longer is better, but having those personal resources like that Volkswagen camper van where it becomes an adventure rather than a horror story is really an important consideration in these times. Right now, specifically, today, Israel is threatening to bomb Iran. If that happens, and as nutty as that sounds, they did it once in Iraq to take out Iraq's nuclear capability. They want to take out Iran's nuclear capability. Well, that changes the oil picture from this point forward. As soon as you take Iran offline or their oil is diverted to China as opposed to the global market, oil prices skyrocket. So how do we get from place to place at $5, $6, $7 a gallon for oil or gasoline? And looking at each one of our own personal subsystems, support systems, where are we most vulnerable? And asking ourselves, who in our neighborhood, for example, we have a very tight-knit neighborhood where I am in our 450 houses, and we did a neighborhood inventory. Who's the doctor? Who's a veterinarian? Who's an engineer? Who can fix stuff? Who has tools? Who has hand tools if there isn't electric? Who has solar? Who has a well because we're on our community water system? And so we now have a little, maybe 30 or 40 home inventory of who has what skills. And so if we need help, who can be there and who do we turn to? We have our phone lists and we have our, you know, knock on the door of the doctor across the street because the kid fell and broke his arm. We have those resources in our hands. And I just don't think it's too soon to be identifying on a personal and a neighborhood basis what are our strengths and what are our weaknesses. Because there are technologies in every case, and we'll go through those more next week, specifically, what can we do now to prepare? We still have flexibility now. The economy is terrible, but we still have flexibility. Stuff is still available. And now is the time to be preparing ourselves in very meaningful ways and knowing where our information resources are. If you don't have electric backup, how do you get the information off your computer, for example?
David, I love what you're describing here. It's a combination of shock prep and shock proofing of sorts in that localized level. But what you're also describing is going back to where you really began the show, and that is the connection of those elements, those subsystems of sustainability for us personally and then more in our community. But you're really combining that with the two words you used earlier, resilience and vitality, and actually making that the explicit distinction between those two vehicles, one being more resilient in its orientation and it's being able to thrive and actually go beyond just sort of surviving. Seems like that's a really wonderful metaphor for bringing together those three dimensions that you actually even started with.
It really is. Which car do you want to be in is the constant question you should be asking yourself.
Which car do we want to be in? And then at the same time, do you have thoughts as we begin here? I think we've actually got about maybe 30 seconds left, David. Final thoughts about just even that interior dimension and its preparation.
If we're self-reliant between our ears, we feel as though we're capable. What's our internal capability scale on 1 to 10? We're a lot more peaceful about facing the changes, facing the transformation. I don't worry. I'm a builder. I can make stuff. I can fix stuff. I can create a semblance of security around us that someone who's never used a tool doesn't have. And so with that sense of capability, I'm a lot calmer about looking into the future. I'll tell you, having a solar system with a battery backup gives me peace of mind like nothing else can. And those are the things we want to ascertain for ourselves.
I think that's a great way to end it today, David. I think it is that interior perspective. It does provide that sense of ease and calmness, but it is that combination, as we're always talking about on Zoom, the presence of that interior state, the combination of the outer world of preparation, thinking with the context of resilience and vitality, with the context of sustainability, and an orientation that this renaissance is underpinned by a combination of what we do, our views, our new views, the flow of our own consciousness, the new human that's living into the future, and the renaissance of the new world that's coming with it. David, great to have you as part one of the conversation today. I look forward to next week.
Really a pleasure, John. Me too.
All right, great deeper. Folks. Enjoy, continue the focus and flow. Consider your own analogy of the vehicles. Which one would you rather be in? I suggest you think about it if it's your first time to it. If not, if it's you've been considering this, take another look at it. We continue next week. More detail, more on the subsystems, more on the context of sustainability, and from here to there relative to sustainability. Have a great week, folks. Zoomed out, John Schmidt, David Johnston. Till next week. Thanks.
Bye, John.
See ya. Bye.
Thank you again for listening to Zoomed Leadership with host John Schmidt. Please be sure to join us again next Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. And have a terrific week.